But is there any, with regards to Josh Norman, is there any room for concern? Because last year we noted it as his really breakout year. But when you look at it, the difference between the Redskins and the Panthers, Panthers are one of the best defenses out there. Where Redskins, yes, they're improving, but they're nowhere near the caliber of the Panthers. So are you nervous that teams could start really picking on him, especially?
Here's the real question. Here's the real question. Him being the highest paid corner in the league, right? Is he the next Albert Haynesworth? Potentially.
Well, the one thing that you always heard about Haynesworth when he was in Tennessee before he came up here was the guy showed up to practice late. You know, he was like a DeSean Jackson type. Last to get there, first to leave kind of thing. The one thing that you consistently hear about Norman out of camp this year is he's there working. Everybody's impressed with his work ethic. And I think, you know, maybe somebody might pay that lip service the first time they bring it up. That mantra has been repeated that Norman is there working. So I'm not worried about him, you know, sandbagging. The one thing that does worry me from an X's and O's standpoint is that, yes, that Panthers front seven, probably other than Denver, probably the best in the league. But behind them, what they were doing with the secondary was they were playing zone. Norman, his whole career has been spent, from what I can tell, playing in zone, and what the Skins are going to ask him to do is play a lot more man-to-man. And, you know, with the guys that he's got around him, you know, I'm not a huge fan of D'Angelo Hall. I know he makes big plays. I think he takes more off the table than he puts on it. I think Norman's going to – I think he'll be put on an island a couple times. I think he's going to get beat just like every cornerback does, and I think the true test of how good he's going to be is going to be how he responds to the couple times that he does get beat in man-to-man coverage that he hasn't played. But I don't know. The one thing about, you know, the money, I don't know if you guys heard about this too. He was telling somebody the other day during an interview that he turned down more money from another team come here because he thought the Redskins had a better chance of the title. So, you know, who knows if that's true. But if it's just about the money, he's already proven that that's not the most important thing to him. Plus, you know, it's funny, man, like, you don't know these guys. I was a huge Kirby Puckett fan, you know, and then to find out, like, what a piece of garbage that guy turned out to be. Like, you don't know any of these athletes off the field. But from what everything that I've seen with Norman, his teammates never had anything negative to say about him. The opposition, other than Beckham, you know, has never had a lot of negative things to say about him. I think he's got a very promising future ahead of him. I just hope the difference between playing man and zone, you know, isn't one of the reasons that he flops.
Right. Absolutely, and you touched on it. Like, I think even if his whole mindset was, yo, I want to get, you know, I want to join the Redskins because they were offering the most money, I don't blame him for doing that. You got to maximize, you know, the amount of years you have, because the average career in the NFL is what, 3 years?
What does NFL usually stand for? Not for long.
Yeah, there you go. So,
yeah, well, at 22, man, like, you look at, like, you know, ask anybody that has that mentality of, like, oh, like, these dudes in the market, like, you go to a day job, you know, you're going to try and get as much money as you can. Mm-hmm. I will say that there's guys, the problem I have is with guys like Carmelo Anthony. You know, he takes more money to stay with the Knicks.
Man, you love bashing New Yorkers.
Wow.
Right. You know, like, you could have gone to Chicago for, you know, I don't whatever, like $8 million less, which, you know, it's not my money. It's easy for me to say. But listen, you knew what you were doing taking more money to stay on a bunk team. Don't complain after the fact.
I completely agree. Preach on, because I completely agree. I want Carmelo gone. Because he hasn't won us a championship yet, so.
Well, tell me what you guys would be without him. I mean, you guys are nothing
same
right
position,
now. You
man.
Guys would be,
say, we're not making the playoffs.
Well, I don't think Derrick Rose comes without Carmelo. Joakim Noah doesn't come without Melo. I don't think.
Very true.
You don't think about Phil Jackson gotta see how they are being there? He putting the pieces of Porzingis being there, being drafted. That shining light right there. We saw Carmelo Anthony leave December.
I'll say this, too, about Carmelo. You can't say he's not a winner because he did win in college. And from what I've seen today, and then every time he's been on the Olympic teams, I mean, the Olympics are perfect for him. You don't play any D and you shoot three, you know. But,
and he's like a vocal leader for them, so you could see that, you know, being exhibited.
Right. He's had a weird career, man. Like, how many dudes do you see win a college title as a freshman? And I remember watching that team, that tournament. It was him and then McNamara and then Keem Warrick, I think. There was nobody else on that team. He was really the focal point of that team. And then he's gotten to the pros, and I think he's made a conference finals once. But, like, I can't think of anybody else who won a college title and really hasn't matched that in the NBA.
Right. And, you know, speaking on that, you had sent me, you know, a couple of names that you were big fans of, you know, growing up. And one of them was Larry Bird from the Boston Celtics back in the day, as one of your favorite players. Talk to me about that. Again, Celtics, New York rivalry. So I don't know what it is. I guess you just really, really hate New York. You know, I think there's a lot going in there about New York. So we might have to have another show just to talk about your hatred towards New York. But, yeah, talk to me about Larry Bird.
Well, during the eight, when I was younger, during the 80s, it wasn't Boston and New York. It was Boston and L.A. They played in the finals at least three times.
Yep.
And so, you know, it was one of those things where I just always related more to, I don't know, it's funny because I was actually watching, because I'm such a loser, Game 6 of the 87 finals on replay the other night. And the difference between Boston and L.A. at the time was, you know, L.A. would run, and then Boston was sort of slower and more methodical. Bird for me, because I was always, I just, you know, playing even now, I'm a very streaky shooter, and I think that he was just such a good shooter, and his form was just the same thing over and over again. I always related to that, and I always, as a kid, you know, bought into the narrative of contrasting him with Magic Johnson. The irony, and this is sort of why I think I even liked Larry Bird more than... Larry Bird and Magic Johnson couldn't guard a bar stool one-on-one. I mean, those guys were just not very good defenders. But they were very good team players and help defenders if you watch, like, you know, footage of them and everything like that. So I was really into him. When I was young, I would go to Bullets games. And, like, I remember a couple times I saw Larry Bird in person. It was always pretty impressive to watch. So,
I mean, yeah, you talk, I mean... Yeah, we know that Magic and Bird aren't the greatest defenders, but I think a lot of people remember Bird for, and there was a steer by Bird on Isaiah Thomas back in the day, you know what I mean? So he definitely had moments, and, you know, he made great defensive plays when they counted most. So that is definitely a great role model. Another name you had sent to me, and I'm actually kind of curious about this, was a player from a fullback that used to play with, for the Kansas City Chiefs from 87 to 92, and that's Christian Okoye, yeah. So talk to me about him, because usually people don't come out and say my favorite player was a fullback.
You know? Well, he was an ill – well, here's the thing, though. He was an ill dude because he had the size of a fullback. I think he was like 260, but he ran like a 4 or 5. He didn't even play fullback. He played halfback. And I remember, like, as a kid, you know, you would get cards, like baseball cards, football cards. For whatever reason, I got – a Christian Okoye card. The picture was him just wearing like the massive shoulder pads. He just looked like a badass dude. And then the older I got, and like the more he's just like the nicest guy. He was like an Olympian disc thrower from Nigeria, but he's done like a lot of very good things for communities, like both in Africa and the United States. I always liked his playing style, and then I liked him as a person. But the main thing, he was a beast in Tecmo Super Bowl. I don't know if you guys ever played that, but like you know, like everybody talks about Bo Jackson. He was like Bo Jackson, except you couldn't tackle him. Like Bo Jackson, like he would evade you and everything. Christian Okoye in that game would just run over people.
Wow.
And when you go ahead.
I was just gonna say, there's one other anecdote, and this is definitely going to be feeling a little old for you guys. I don't know if there's anybody out in your audience that remembers. There was a guy named Ken Beatrice. Does that name ring a bell?
Beatrice.
So Ken Beatrice was one of the forefathers of sports talk radio in the D.C. area. Mm-hmm. And so he would say he had like an encyclopedic memory of facts, you know, about sports and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I was like 10 years old, and I called into his radio show once and asked him about Christian Okoye. He's like, I bet you don't know where he went to college. And I immediately was like, Azusa Pacific, because I had his football card right in front of me.